Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Tompkins County Legislature Public Forum. It differs somewhat from the official public hearing on the budget, which is on November 12th at 7 p.m. This is a meeting that will consist of a PowerPoint presentation by the County Administrator, Joe Mariana, and you will be able to view this on these two screens. You will also, after that, I am asking people to come to the desk at the back of the legislature seats and take a place. Speak into those microphones about that far away, maybe 6-8 inches away. It sounds best that way. Make your statement. Now, my hope is 9 o'clock, maybe at the latest, for this meeting. So limit your comments to 2 to 2.5 minutes. But I am allowing, or if your comments run to 5 minutes and there's somebody behind you, you can hand your speech to them and they can finish it up. So what I would like you to do when you come to the microphone is say your name and where you live. And we will start right now with the County Administrator, Joe Mariana. Does anyone want to see the legislators? Go ahead and introduce yourself around the table that are here if you'd like.
Frank Proto, I represent the towns of Caroline, Danby, and a portion of the town of Ithaca.
I'm Kathy Lucerera. I represent the city of Ithaca. It's currently District 5, and it includes a part of, Renwick Heights, and it would be District 2 after the election, and would include Fall Creek, just city of Ithaca.
Hi, I'm Carol Chalk. If I can catch my breath, I'm glad to have made it here on time. I currently represent, it's District 3, which is currently Bell Sherman, Bryant Park, City of Ithaca, across the Cornell campus and some of the dorms on the other side of campus and the living units. That district is slated to change after the first of the year, and it will include Bell Sherman, Bryant Park, some of the dorms, and then across South Hill. So that section of the first ward has been added to District 3 on the county.
Good evening. My name is Will Burbank, and I represent District 12 in the town of Ithaca, which is portions of West Hill, Inlet Valley, and the area above Ithaca College. Over to King Road. And I'm seeing people stand over there. There are seats behind me and a few seats over there. You folks should make yourself comfortable.
Hi, I am not Leslyn McBean Claiborne. She's right here. She's had family matters that she needs to tend to. Her husband, JR, is present here. And I believe she represents downtown Ithaca. My name is Brian Robison. I represent District 9, which is the entire town of Groton and small parts of Dryden and Lansing.
My name is Nate Shinagawa, and I'm a county legislator representing District 4, which currently is College Town for the most part. In January, that new district will actually, the new District 4 will be College Town and all of the commons as well. And so it's a very exciting district to represent, and thank you all for being here today.
Hi, my name is Martha Robertson. I'm chair of the legislature, and gave Jim's the budget chair, so he gets to be in the front tonight. I represent the western half of the town of Dryden, and in the new district lines, it doesn't change much at all.
I'm Mike Lane. I'm the vice chair of the legislature. I'm from Dryden, the eastern part of Dryden. Which includes the villages of Dryden and Freeville and the surrounding areas. That's District 14. And in the new rendition for next year, it'll be pretty much the same, shrunk a little bit.
I'm Dave McKenna, represent District 8, which is all of Newfield and the southern half of Enfield from Route 79 south.
Hi, it's good to see everybody here tonight. I'm Pat Pryor. I represent District 6, which includes the town of Lansing, north of the village, and all of the town of Lansing north of the village except for a little small strip adjacent to Groton, which is the section that Brian referenced that he represents.
I'm Peter Stein. I represent the eastern slice or eastern third of the town of Ithaca, except for Cuba Heights, which is represented by my colleague, Julie Kiefer, who I think is not here yet. In the new redistricting, I do not believe there will even be a single house changed, as near as I can tell.
My name is Pam Mackesy. I represent West Hill, South Hill, and the whole southern end of the city. I call it the Smile, because it goes all the way over to State Street and all the way up to the town of Ulysses on the west side of the lake. My district the district lines have changed, and the district will become part of Carol Talk's district, and I chose not to run this year, and I will be leaving the legislature at the end of the year.
Again, I'm Jim Dennis. I represent all of Ulysses, northern half of Enfield, and the district number is 15. If I'm successful in a re-election, it will be number 5, and there will be a sliver of the town of Ithaca. The county administrator, Joe Mariana, is not running for re-election. He is here to talk about the budget.
Thank you, and I see Julie Kiefer, Legislator Kiefer, coming in right now, too, so I will introduce her as she's coming in.
And here
Jim has given us until 9 o'clock to wrap things up. I should be done by about 10 minutes to 9, this PowerPoint, so that gives everybody about 10 minutes. What I'd like to do tonight is to give you just an overview of the budget that has been presented to the legislature. So this is a recommended budget that's been prepared by my office and presented to the legislature for its consideration, which is a part of what you're doing tonight, is to provide input to the legislature to help them come to an opinion about this budget and whether they would like to make any changes to it. In terms of how the budget begins, you always look at what's affecting the budget. You want to know what the trends are, because we are in the human services business, and a lot of the work that we do and the money that we spend relates to the environment that we're in, including the economic environment. So in terms of how this budget gets set up, some of the things that are influencing it from the outside, we are in a period where unemployment is still high, higher than as a community we are accustomed to. We have a great history of unemployment rates in the 3% range. We're still up in the 5s or even 6s. It's high. It's declining a bit, but really plateauing at a fairly high level. Inflation is very low. That's good for us because a lot of what we spend our money on is affected by inflation. So we're in a low inflation environment. We always put this up on our radar, consumer confidence. It's generally rising right now. The reason we do that is when people are feeling good about the economy in the future, they spend their money a little more than they might if they're not so confident in the economy. When they spend money, we are the beneficiaries of sales tax on some of the money that we spend. So we watch this trend pretty closely. Again, you can see it's generally rising, although it's been dipping over the past few months. Important to the county because, again, much of what we do and much of what we spend relates to human services, and the demand for human services goes up when the economy goes down. So we watch things like how many people, how many households are dependent on food stamps for nutrition. This is a very alarming chart that we watch very carefully. You can see since 2001 what the trend has been in terms of households in our community who need food stamps for basic survival. It has gone up significantly. It spiked. You can see the chart really begins to move quickly when the economy went down. The troubling thing is, with the economy apparently getting better, you would hope to see that line going down, and it's not. It continues to rise almost every month. It's a good barometer of need. That's why we watch it so carefully. There are also some critical social problems that are still in the community and growing. We're going in a direction that we don't want. But again, as a county, we have to attend to things like children in placement, kids who are in abusive or neglectful households that we have to address. You can see that trend line has gone up post-recession. On the good side, the stock market continues to gain, and that, again, is a barometer of an underlying economy. That's a good sign for us. So in terms of economic and fiscal influences, those are some of the major ones that affected the 2014 budget and the way we constructed it. Now we get more into the budget itself, and we begin the process very early. We begin the process back in April, and we say, based on what we know at that time, what's a reasonable amount of additional property tax to assume as we build the budget? We start usually with what we call maintenance of effort. What would it take to continue programs and services at current levels? And we work from there. So back in April, the legislature said, we want you to build a budget that stays within a 4% increase in the tax levy. So that was a target that was set by the legislature back in April based on what was known then. In doing that, we basically set some goals for ourselves to achieve within that limitation on tax levy. We wanted to maintain current levels of service. We've said that we are in a maintenance mode, not an expansion mode. We do want to maintain current levels of service. We want to reinvest in our facilities and infrastructure. And everyone knows during bad times, you tend to pull back from that kind of spending. We wanted to reverse that and reinvest in facilities and infrastructure and commit a part of our levy increase to that kind of capital investment. There were a number of our sponsored partners and agency partners that were in trouble, and we wanted to attend to some of those needs. Our goal as a county over the past couple of years is to stabilize after a period of a free fall when the economy went south. We looked at and saw that many of the agencies who are dependent on us for the major part of their funding were in trouble as well, and we committed ourselves to try to help stabilize them as well. We wanted to do that without compromising our fiscal strength, our budgetary stability, and there were a few critical internal staffing needs that we said if we could, we would like to attend to those as well, all within that levy limit of 4%. Some of the things in the budget that were major influences, so as we're creating the budget, some of the things that we had to address as a part of the budget that we ultimately recommended to the legislature. This is kind of a good thing, but it's still an increase in our budget. We had modest wage growth that we had to fund. We are in a five-year contract environment for most of our employees. We had a great partnership and have a great partnership with our labor unions. They agreed to a five-year wage plan in 2014. All those settled contracts, and it's about 90% of our employees are in at 2%. That's low wage growth, but that still drives up payroll by a little over $1 million. We added a few positions in this budget. So if you look through the details of the budget, you'd find that we are up by about four positions. However, some of those are temporary positions or one-time positions. So the recurring increase in our roster is only 1.7. Even when you take that small growth into account, if you compare where the workforce is in 2014, it is still down 7.5% from where it was in 2009. We have gotten smaller as a government over the past 4 or 5 years. This just kind of plots out where the workforce has been and where it is. We had a bit of good news this year. Our fringe benefits, which have been growing very quickly, are stabilizing. The pension rate, which has been a problem, actually went down a bit. Our health premiums are up by 8%. Our fringe benefits are up by about $500,000. So even though there's stability, it still is $500,000 of increasing costs. We talk a lot about pension trends. I'm not going to burden you with a lot of that. But the blue lines are what we've experienced over the past few years. You can see how quickly they went up as a percent of payroll. The red bar is where we think they'll be in 2014. Our expectation is pension rates will continue to decline as the economy improves. We had another bit of good news in that some of our largest mandated human services costs actually declined for 2014. At least they are projected to decline, and this just shows those programs and the trend between 2013 and 2014. We haven't had the luxury of talking about declines in mandated services for a very long time. Much of the reason for that decline in mandated costs comes in one area, which is Medicaid. Here again, over time, we've rarely talked about Medicaid relief, but the state expects kind of a windfall from the Affordable Care Act that will benefit its Medicaid costs. We share in the benefits that the state will receive and it will have a $351,000 ongoing effect on our budget. That's very good news for us. At the same time, there are some other mandates like child care, not to be confused with daycare. This is child welfare. There, you saw a chart when we began the PowerPoint, the caseloads, the number of children who we are dealing with who are in abusive or neglectful households has increased at a very high rate. It continues to be high. We think spending will be up in that area by 17%, so there's $300,000 in added costs there. We said we would reinvest in capital. This budget proposes that we do that. We follow our policy. We are increasing our capital commitments and plan to going in by a little over $300,000. We think that's a good thing to reinvest in infrastructure. Sales tax isn't so good. Sales tax, at least through the first half of the year, was growing at a very slow rate. It was up by only 1.15%. So as we projected out sales tax revenues for next year, we projected continuing slow growth in sales tax. Normally, you'd expect to see 2 or 3%. So we're expecting fairly slow growth. It's only $191,000 in new revenue. This gets a little bit into the weeds, but payments in lieu of tax, down. It's an important revenue source for it, down a little bit in 2014, largely because of a negotiated decrease in the pilot for the power plant. Pilot means payment in lieu of tax on the power plant in Lansing. I saw Kathy here. Her pilot is going down as well next year. We talked when we began about sponsored and partner agencies, significant needs in those, call them first cousins of county government. The community college had gone a long time without any significant increase in county contributions. The public library we had identified last year had a structural deficit. It was very high, about $400,000, a major problem there. TCAD, our economic development agency, had experienced a loss of fee-based income because the economy slowed down and fewer fees were being generated. They needed help to stay viable and do the kind of work we need to grow the economy here. TCAT was experiencing some significant stress, including a huge uncertainty about what the future will mean with federal funding at risk or non-existent. TCAT relies a lot on federal funding. Even TC Action was experiencing cuts because of the federal sequestration. So those are agencies that rely a lot on county funding for their survival. And we knew in setting up this budget we needed to help them find stability. So those were the ingredients that were kind of stirred into this budget. So again, our goal in developing the budget was to maintain services. The budget that you have an opportunity to talk about tonight does that. So this budget is based on no reduction in service, no increase in service. Our goal was to reinvest in capital. We fully implemented a new 20-year capital plan. If you look at our proposed increase in the tax levy, 0.75% of that 3.5% increase is all about reinvesting in our infrastructure. Our goal is to stabilize sponsored agencies, and we spent a lot of time over the last year on this. We were able to, the legislature approved a 3% increase for TC3, and again, that's after a long string of either small or no growth at all. We have proposed a $315,000 increase in support for the library to help them close the structural deficit. Some of that will come in the form of property tax support. The rest of it will have to pull out of county reserves to help balance that budget. TCAD, our economic development agency, a new revenue model for that addresses their needs for the long term, and a new revenue model for TCAT. This legislature has approved a new 0.25% increase in the mortgage tax that will go directly to support public transit for TCAT. Much needed help to sustain that operation. A little bit of additional support for the Soil and Water Conservation District and for TC Action. And then all of our other agencies received a 1.5% cost of living increase. Our goal is fiscal stability. We worked on that as well. We were able to build this budget and actually strengthen our fiscal condition. We're less reliant on reserves in 2014 than we have been for many years. We also increased our contingency account a bit, just to give ourselves a hedge against some very tight estimates. Our goal is to address some critical staffing needs. We did it in a few important areas of county government. But again, the net recurring increase in personnel is only 1.7 full-time equivalents. There's some risks here. God only knows what the federal government will do the next time we hit the crisis point, but we're at risk of federal cuts. There's very little margin of error in our estimates, and if the Affordable Care Act doesn't produce the kind of savings the state is expecting when it projects Medicaid, that will be a problem as well to us. So kind of closing this out, just in terms of some of the numbers, the recommended budget that the legislature is considering right now would raise the property tax levy by a little over 3.5%. That's a little over $1.5 million in additional property taxes. We have what are called over-target requests. So we issue targets to our departments and agencies. They build their budgets within those targets, but if they think they need more, they ask for more through an over-target request. About $1.9 million was requested. That would have had $1.25 million impact on our levy. We were able to support $1.37 million of those requests, having an effect on levy of about $700,000. So you can see that we weren't able to do all of the OTRs that were presented for consideration. The legislature will have another bite at that apple and can reconsider that. Our total budget is up by about 2.9%. Our local budget, so the part of our budget that's not reimbursed by state or federal sources, is up by much less than that. It's up by 1.6%. The tax levy, as I said, is up by about 3.5% right now. The tax rate, we have a growing tax base, so that means that our tax rate grows by a slower rate than the levy. Our tax rate is only up by 1.9%. And this is what most people want to know. What's it mean to them? Well, for an average home, it means an extra $21 in 2014, a little less than a 2% increase in the amount that they pay through their tax bills. So that is kind of a condensed version of a budget that runs about 800 pages, and I hope that gives you a quick overview of the structure and what's in it and what some of the influences were.
Martha.
Joe, could you talk a minute? That was really great. I know it's a lot to absorb. Could you go back to the fiscal goal, how we set the 4% tax levy target, the idea of starting with your maintenance of effort budget and then adding and subtracting? I think that's an important piece.
Sure. And this goes back to April, and this budget process is a very good one. Going into the process, departments know what their targets are. And that's I've done this for a long time. This is a very helpful process. So in April, we look at how much it would cost just to keep doing what we're currently doing. And as we did that, it looked like it was going to cost about 4%. We would have to raise our property tax levy by about 4% to do that. But we wanted to do more because we knew that some of our agencies, those sponsored agencies we talked about, were in trouble, and they were going to need a boost. So that would have been amounts beyond that 4%. So I think it was more like 4.5% or 5% that we would have needed to satisfy all of those things. That's not what the legislature approved. So in approving a 4% tax levy goal, our departments actually had to make small cuts to be able to stay within their target and allow us to do some other improvements within the sponsored agencies. Is that's the explanation?
Yeah, just really that just doing the same stuff in 2014 as we did in 2013 would cost 4% more was the main point.
Yes.
Thanks.
Before we begin, I want to give you a number. Every 1% on our levy equals $438,000. So every 1% that it goes up or down is either a gain or a loss of $438,000. I have a sheet with 24 names on it, and there are 15 of the names who are talking about the big brother, big sister, 5 about living wage, and the rest about individual items. The first name is Kathy Garrick. If you would come to the back desk, you have the microphone.
Good evening. Thank you for seeing me. My name is Kathy Gehring. I represent the town of Dryden. I am on the Tompkins County Youth Services Board. I'd like to discuss their over-target requests. I addressed you today on behalf of the board's Real Resource Allocation Committee, which sets the priorities and recommends the distributions of funds for youth programs within Tompkins County. Allocations of funding for contracted agencies in the past 7 years have been essentially a simple task as we worked on extensions of a contract. After years of continuations and cuts, the board felt it was time to change criteria. Time to change to an open request for proposal, meaning any agency that met certain criteria could request funds for youth programming. In addition, these programs that were chosen for 2014 funding would be able to request funds for the following 3 years. In January 2013, the Resource Allocation Committee began discussing the priorities of funding for funding. We discussed several different types of rubrics and the New York State research-based touchstones, along with the results of the 2012 needs assessment. The priorities are listed in the letter that has been distributed to you. Between February and July, the Resource Allocation Committee met numerous times to discuss, review, and evaluate in detail each individual proposal that was submitted. Funding recommendations were made according to the chosen priorities and submitted proposals. Though the target budget has passed through initial review, several of the committee's over-target funding requests have not been supported in the proposed county budget. We urge the legislature to reconsider these requests and provide funds according to the committee and Youth Services Board's prioritization. The first over-target request is for the use of rollover funding from 2012 to support the continuation of three essential offerings of the Tompkins County Youth Services Department. The first one is for the Advocacy Center, the only organization in Tompkins County that provides services and support to domestic violence victims. To not receive those funds necessary to assist those children who have gone through domestic violence would cause a 7% immediate reduction in their youth services programs. This one-time funding would allow the Advocacy Center time to plan for backfilling this funding for 2015.
You have 30 seconds, okay?
Okay. The second one is Municipal Youth Services System has three vans in major need of maintenance. These vans are essential for outlying and rural communities such as Dryden, Caroline, Danby, and Groton. The third is development survey, which assists with training and information for organizations such as the Health Department, Human Services Coalition, and Drug and Alcohol Council. The second over-target request is for the 4-H Urban Outreach Program that targets children in West Hill. This is for the expansion of this program. The other two over-target requests are listed in the letter that has been distributed to you. The Resource Allocation Committee of the Tompkins County Youth Services Board has spent many hours analyzing and prioritizing funding goals. We encourage these and strongly urge the county legislature to reconsider the recommendations presented to you in the proposed county budget and to authorize funding for all of the submitted over-target requests.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Susie Brock, is it? B-R-A-C-H-E, City of Ithaca. And please try to limit it to right around two and a half minutes. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Susie Brache, and I am from the 4-H Urban Outreach Program at Cooperative Extension, which was just mentioned a moment ago. I'm here tonight to address the over-target request and its significance to us, as well as provide an update as to what we're doing in our program. After 35 years of after-school programming at West Village Apartments, we made a big decision to move our program to the LACS school just down the street so that we can expand and serve more youth in the community. And this was in response to requests from the community so we can serve more children and families living in the apartments. And to keep it short, I guess, the over-target request is...
You need to back up from the mic about 8 inches.
Okay. 6 to 8 inches.
There you go.
Sorry.
And
So the over-target request is really to, it will help our program become sustainable, to be simple. We have lost a tremendous amount of funding in the past 5 years, and the funding will allow us to gain some ground again. And as I said before, we're going to be serving more youth than before. Our staff has not been able to increase by much, if any. We have a pretty tiny staff. And we've, because of the funding losses, we were forced to charge small fees to families, incredibly small fees, and that became a deterrent for families. So having extra dollars will help us to hopefully erase those fees and allow the program to be free for families or even lower cost to serve more families in need, as well as transportation needs for those who live a little farther away, such as Cedar Creek, which is not quite walking distance. We don't want that to be a deterrent either. And again, it will help us to grow larger and become sustainable to make up for the losses that we've had.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I have Don Trotter from Newfield talking about TCPL. I hope I got your first name right, sir.
Good evening. My name is Don Trotter. I'm from the town of Newfield, and I have the honor to be the president of the Friends of the Tompkins County Library. And I'm here to present to you a resolution which the Board of Directors passed last week. I think a copy has been distributed to everyone. The resolution says, the Board of Directors of the Friends of the Tompkins County Public Library, on behalf of our 250-plus members, wishes to express its appreciation to the Tompkins County Legislature for its support of the library in these difficult fiscal times. We applaud the proposal to increase library funding in the 2014 budget and appreciate the adoption of the recommendations of the Library Structural Deficit Work Group. At the same time, we recognize that the work group's recommendations require that the library and county reserves be spent to close the library's budget gap. The Friends have also been spending our reserves in an effort to ensure that TCPL continues to be the kind of library that Tompkins County needs. Our support primarily funds the vast majority of the TCPL collection budget from proceeds of our semi-annual book sales. But in sustaining that support in the years ahead, we are faced with the uncertainty of book donations and the purchasing behavior of the public as reading and entertainment media change. So we would endorse the importance of the work group's call for, quote, a high-level strategic review to establish or affirm the long-term vision and goals for the library and sustainable revenue strategies to support that vision, end quote. The Friends are currently including TCPL and the Finger Lakes Library System in the formulation of strategies to sustain book sale or equivalent revenues for their support in furtherance of the work group objectives. As Friends, we stand ready to help advocate within our IRS constraints for appropriate further recommendations of the work group. Thank you.
Thank you. Next I have, and pardon me, Yvonne, it looks like Starrett. I apologize.
Hi, I'm Yvonne Starner, and I am a social worker with Tompkins County Mental Health Clinic. And I'm talking to you today about the youth services funding for the Advocacy Center specifically. I wanted to give you an idea as to how their services work for the youth that I work with. I've worked pretty closely with the Advocacy Center and their Youth Services Committee, or their Youth Services Program. The advocacy that they provide to the youth that I have worked with has been phenomenal. The young adolescents and children that have used their services, the Advocacy Center has provided someone to meet them at the hospital for medical appointments when needed. They've met them at legal appointments when needed. And they've provided group services for other youngsters who have been through similar experiences to be able to be with one another and support one another. These are things that I, as an individual therapist, cannot provide due to HIPAA or due to constraints of my job description. They're a much-needed service in our community for our youngsters. I just urge the committee to really think about the cons of cutting such an important funding or a service in this community. That's all I really
Thank you, Yvonne. Alan Green, Town of Dryden, Big Brother, Big Sister.
Hi, I'd like to thank Suki Tabor for donating 2.5 minutes to me, so I'll try to limit my remarks to 4.5 minutes. Good evening. As you know, I sent you all a couple of What's Wrong With This Picture flyers. The first had a graph detailing the 69% funding cuts to Big Brothers Big Sisters over the course of the last 5 years, juxtaposed over some of your own stated goals with regards to maintaining existing service levels this year and stabilizing contract agencies. The second had a pie chart detailing where the Big Brother Big Sister program's funds come from and juxtaposing that with where the children and the young people in our county live. But there's more that's wrong with this picture. What else? Well, it's been mentioned that the Youth Services Board had ranked the Big Brothers Big Sisters over target request lower than several others. This is true. We disagree with the ranking. But keep in mind that the recommended budget does not include funding for the two over-target requests that the board ranked highest. It does propose funding for those that were ranked third and fourth. So if you were to argue for funding the OTRs that were the board's highest priority, you could not look to the proposed budget as your guide. What else? Well, I read with interest about your plans to spend just over $1 million on phase one of jail expansion. I don't disagree with your decision. I have no doubt that you looked at the costs of boarding out carefully, and I imagine that you also looked at the alternatives to incarceration in addition. I do, however, doubt whether you took a close look at the cost of early intervention and delinquency prevention as an alternative to investing in incarceration. New York State Comptroller Thomas DiNapoli has estimated this cost at $210,000 per year per young person. New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg came up to Lansing for a photo op to announce his plans to invest in working with youth locally rather than send them to costly upstate institutions that do no good. California spent billions on prisons and additional billions on corrections officers, only to find that it was a massive waste of the taxpayers' money. Now they find themselves under a federal court order to speed the release of prisoners from their bloated and costly prison system. And then there's Wisconsin. I was fascinated by the arrival here in Ithaca just a couple of weeks ago of some trainers from Milwaukee who came here to teach us about wraparound services. Wisconsin, the state with the highest per capita incarceration rate of black males of any state in the union, and guess which county in Wisconsin has the highest rate of incarceration of black males in Wisconsin? You guessed it, Milwaukee County. What else is wrong with this picture? Well, we looked carefully at structural deficits at the library, at TCAT, at TC3, at TCAD, and at soil and water conservation that needed fixing. But we somehow neglected to look at a similar structural deficit when it comes to mentoring for our young people. Boys are just as important as books. Youth development is just as important as economic development. So although I usually refrain from advising you about the county budget, this year I need to make an exception. In 2013, 73% of your net local total of about $80 million went to salary and fringe. In 2014, proposed, that goes up to 74%. Salary and wage expenses are up by $1.1 million over 2013. So that's where the money is. Why would we dismantle mentoring services that account for 0.07% of our costs while increasing spending in the category that accounts for 74% of our spending? Big Brothers Big Sisters has taken serious steps to lower costs. We've had 2 retirements in the last year and have lowered the staffing from 6 people to 4 people, cutting 1/3 of the program staff. And at the same time, we've been working even harder to raise funds through Roll for Kids' Sake and Bowl for Kids' Sake. And we've been growing the Friends of the Ithaca Youth Bureau in an effort to raise private funds and reduce our reliance on tax dollars. What else is wrong with this picture? Well, we should be deciding who to match with a big brother or a big sister based on which family has the greatest need. Instead, these unrelenting deep cuts have pushed us into a situation in which our starting point is looking at where they live.
Part of the problem is that we may be using the wrong definition of mandated service. We tend to define a mandated service as something that Albany or Washington says you've got to do.
30 seconds, Alan. Please.
Albany and Washington don't always know what's best. I would tell you that a mandated service is one that the community needs and wants, one that the community can afford, one that is a good investment, is cost-effective, and makes good use of our resources, one that our gut tells us it makes sense to fund. Big Brothers Big Sisters is precisely that sort of mandated service. There's a need. The community wants it. The community can afford it because it's a good investment that will save us money in the future. We have dedicated volunteer mentors who are ready, willing, and able to take on the challenge of working with a young person. The infrastructure is in place. We've been refining it over the course of 36 years. We should take full advantage of this amazing resource, and it would be fiscally irresponsible not to do so. Your job is harder than mine. You have to weigh all sorts of issues and address all sorts of needs. All I have to do is to be able to look every parent in the eye and be able to assure them that we are doing all we can reasonably do to assure that their child turns out okay. Each of the disturbed young men that were involved in the tragedies in Newtown, Aurora, and Columbine was described as reclusive. In those communities, they missed the clues or they didn't know what to do. Now, I can't say for sure that having a mentor would have made the difference for those young people, but I can say for sure that we have young people in our community right now that need lots of help. I want to be able to look their parents in the eye and say that we will do all that we can reasonably do. Dismantling Big Brothers Big Sisters will not save us money or improve the quality of life in our community, so please do not do it.
I would just like to say to the community here that the amount of money we're talking about is $21,000. Scott Noren, Town of Ithaca, Big Brother, Big Sister. I am going to make an effort to keep to the time limit.
Scott Noren, Dr. Scott Noren, Town of Ithaca resident. I wanted to talk a little bit about more of an overview, not plugging any particular issue, although I did want to say that the last comments I completely wholeheartedly agree with. But you have to look at some of the sources for some of the causes for some of those services to come about in the first place. As a healthcare provider, I see, you know, a high rate of alcoholism, drug abuse, and tobacco use as a source of healthcare problems that sometimes actually impact on family life and the need for social services. I think there are some common sense things that we can do with the budget to work on providing even the $21,000 amounts for services like this. Some of it has to do with good old-fashioned volunteerism. I know we have a lot of volunteers in Ithaca, but I think we can even go further. I can see from the graph that child care expenses are really high, and I think that's one area that the county could work on, lowering the cost of child care by even more volunteerism in some way, or working on that number. I think the other thing that was mentioned, pensions and salaries, are an important component for keeping the budget tame. And I look at the graph, you know, for pension trend. I'm a Democrat, but I don't particularly think this is going to go over well with a lot of people, but I think pensions could be tied to maybe 15% or capped at 15% of a budget. So that's just a number, but, I mean, trying to keep it under control. Pensions are great. Everybody should have a pension as possible. But I think, you know, if you want to provide other services, you have to keep some of those expenses under control. And as far as energy costs, I know the county is doing an amazing job at trying to have innovative measures for renewables. I think biomass is kind of it's a whole sticking point with me anyway.
30 seconds, please.
But I think the work that we're doing with solar, wind, and probably eventually some more geothermal use in this county would actually bring down energy costs. So anything in general that we can still whittle down and do better than what we're doing, even on a bigger scale, will make the $21,000 amounts for these services, which are essential and crucial, easier to attain.
Thank you. Larry Roberts, let me just make one fact comment. Pensions for our employees are not controlled locally. That's a New York State law. They are controlled by the pension group in New York State, by the Constitution of New York State. So we do not have no local government has control over what membership in the New York State pension and how much we are to pay. Larry Roberts.
Hi. So I'm actually reading a statement for somebody who couldn't be here.
Perfect.
So this is from Ann Collins, who lives in the city of Ithaca. Most people have heard the quote, "It takes a village to raise a child." But how many people ever really stop to think about what that means? I grew up in a single-parent household. It was me, my mom, and my two sisters. Growing up in a single-parent household is enough of a struggle. My mother was an addict, so that made for a tough childhood for me and my sisters. I was lucky that at some point my mom realized that my sisters and I needed something in our lives to fill the void left by not having a father. When I was 6, she signed us up for the one-to-one program, now the Big Brothers Big Sisters program. I was matched with Nikki. I could go on with memories from my childhood with Nikki, all of our trips to Stewart Park, Friendly's restaurants, the YMCA, sleepovers at her house. All of these things were simple childhood pleasures. It was the conversations we had, the things she taught me about the world, life, and what I was capable of, gently leading me and teaching me when I was a child, later more pointedly directing me and giving me advice as I developed into an adult. I have two children of my own now that consider Nikki and her wife Lisa. They are aunties. Both of my boys have so much fun with them and get so much joy out of the family that we've created. And I have the tools to raise my boys to be caring, happy, healthy children because of my relationship with Nikki. I am currently a host for the Fresh Air Fund, hosting the same child for 5 years. I'm also the local co-chair for the program. I'm also involved in the local Ithaca Sports Boosters program as their secretary and membership coordinator. My involvement in community organizations that support children is my way of passing on all that Nikki has taught me and given me by being my big sister. Anytime I meet someone that knew what my childhood was like, or someone too new to my life learns of the struggles I faced as a child, I am often commended for being so positive, for being a good parent, and for being a hard worker and being focused in my life. I always tell people about my big sister and the role she played in making me who I am today. I always give the credit to Nikki and to the Big Brothers Big Sisters program. So for me, when I hear the quote, "It takes a village to raise a child," I know exactly what that means. Children need all of the support they can get. They need to know that their community cares about them and will be there to raise them and give them whatever they need, and they need mentors.
Thank you, Larry. Next is Nicole Carrier, and I'm...
Cece.
Okay. And Lisa Carrier.
And if it's okay, Jim, let me know when my time is up and my wife is going to finish reading my remarks.
Absolutely.
Okay,
go ahead.
My name is Nikki. I've been Anne's big sister for 27 years. Hearing the beautiful things my little sister Anne has to say about the impact I had on her life is rather humbling. But I'm not here to toot my own horn about being a big sister. I'm here because the Big Brothers Big Sisters program has changed my life too. In 1986, I was a grad student at Cornell when I signed up to volunteer at the Ithaca Youth Bureau's one-to-one program. Before then, I had no connection whatsoever with anything outside the CU campus. Meeting Anne, her mom, and her sisters was my introduction to Ithaca life. It was the beginning of my becoming a real contributing member of Tompkins County. I could tell you many sentimental tales about how being Anne's big sister changed my life. For instance, I could tell you about how baking a batch of brownies on Saturday night with Anne made it easier to buckle down and study on Sunday morning. Or I could tell you what it meant to me personally to get close to Anne and to her sisters and her mother, all of whom needed great support. I could describe what it was like when I had a serious car accident during Anne's senior year at Ithaca High. I could try to bring tears to your eyes with this scene. Me lying in a hospital bed, paralyzed from the neck down. Anne sitting beside me, tissue in hand. When I turned to her and said, "I can't believe you are wiping my nose," she calmly said, "You wiped my nose enough. It's time I paid you back." I could share some joyful memories, too, giving the toast at Anne's wedding, or being at the hospital for the birth of both of her boys, who are now my nephews. But I can hear you thinking in the back of your mind, "That's all very nice, Nikki. We believe Anne got something out of this program, and we even believe you got something out of this program, but why should the taxpayer be paying for it?" The answer is simple. The Big Brothers, Big Sisters program benefits not just the children involved or the adults who mentor them. It benefits the entire community, sending a rippling effect throughout the county. For example, when Anne had trouble in school, my youth bureau mentor coached me to meet with Anne's teacher. This teacher gave me activities to do with Anne, which improved her reading and writing skills. I became an accidental tutor, which I've been told was a great support for this teacher, and also was one less tutor that school had to find for that child. Having a little sister got Anne and me down off of that hill, got me up the hill, taking Anne to movies, parks, restaurants, swimming, camping, shopping, and I spent what little money I had on countless activities I would have never done without her. And most of those expenditures were taxed, Nicole. And those tax dollars came back to Tompkins County.
Thank you. And
Lisa Carey.
This would be Lisa.
By the time I finished grad school, Anne's family had become a part of my family. There was never any doubt that I would stay in Tompkins County. I worked in the field of human services, giving back to the community in numerous positions right up until the time of my car accident. As my roots in Tompkins County grew, I bought a home. I pay property taxes on that home. I buy goods and services I need for my home here in Tompkins County. Not only does this support the local business, but I pay sales tax on these items as well. When I got married, my wife and I purchased the house next door to us as rental property. We made improvements. The property got reassessed. We paid higher property taxes. We pay more goods and services, which is more income for the county. When my accident stopped my human service career, I started a business in the Tour-Cameron Mall called Presto Plastercrafts. While operating the store, I collected sales tax, created new jobs, and as well as purchased goods and services, which support other local businesses. Most recently, we started renting a space in our home through a website platform called Airbnb, and for this, we collect sales tax. We pay the county a hotel room tax. Would I have done these things had I been a part of the Big Brothers and Big Sisters program? Maybe. But I wouldn't have done. I may have done it someplace else. It was my relationship with Anne and her family that made me stay in Tompkins County. And speaking of them, you should also know this. Being a little sister gave these girls a different model for what an adult life could be. Unlike their mother, who lived off public assistance, all three of these girls are gainfully employed and self-supporting. In fact, the reason Anne isn't here tonight is because she's at her second job. In one generation, this program broke the cycle of poverty and dependence for this family. So you see, I'm not just here because the Big Brothers and Big Sisters program needs your continued financial support. I'm here because Tompkins County needs the Big Brothers and Big Sisters program too. Please do not withdraw your support.
Thank you very much. Heather Campbell, followed by Kathy Miller.
Thank you. My name is Heather Campbell. I live in the town of Danby, and I'm the executive director of the Advocacy Center. And as many of you know, the Advocacy Center is the only agency in the county that provides specialized supportive services to children, teens, and adult victims of domestic violence, child sexual abuse, sexual assault, and rape. We're serving some of the most vulnerable people in our community, and our services are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We've received Youth Services Department funding for over 30 years. And in fact, they were the first funder to support the Child Sexual Abuse Project when it was founded. And for the first time, the Advocacy Center was not included in the budget for the Youth Services Department, and the recommendation of $10,775 was made for one-time over-target funding using the unspent rollover funds from the department. And I'm here to request that the legislator please take action to return this funding to the budget. In the past 5 years, like many nonprofits, we've seen consistent decreases in federal, state, and local funding, while at the same time, we're seeing the steady increase in demand for our services. And referencing the slide that was shown before about the increase in child welfare cases in the county, we're seeing that same increase in our caseload as well. In the past 5 years, funding from all of our local county sources has been reduced by 18%, and this is projected to be a 30% cut in 2013 if this funding is not restored. Last year, we saw an increased demand for services across almost all of our program areas. In 2012, the agency served 1,498 children, teen, and adult victims of violence and abuse in our county. This was an 8% increase over the previous year. And in 2012, we saw a 60% increase in youth who had exams at the Sexual Assault Nurse Examiner Program at Cayuga Medical Center. So we're seeing really significant increases in the need for youth services. We also saw a 13% increase in education programs, and most of this increase was for prevention programs for middle and high school students. This funding is a continuation and not an expansion of services, and the reduction of this funding would leave a significant hole in our 2014 budget. In the past 5 years, we've made all of the cuts that we can do without impacting core services. We've cut 2.5 staff positions, reduced staff benefits, cut most budget lines. A couple of years ago, our staff even took a six-month temporary pay reduction in order to prevent layoffs and maintain core services. More cuts in 2014 would mean cutting core services, and at this point, that means cutting personnel. Cutting a half-time client services staff person translates into not being able to serve nearly 100 youth victims of abuse and their family members. Cutting an educator means over 100 less prevention programs in county schools. And the prevention and intervention services that we provide save money over the long term, and we're also changing lives. I urge you to remember that the services that we provide to families and youth are critical to youth success in all other areas of their life as well. And there is this very real need for our services. And I have copies, if I could just hand out to people, of articles that have been in the Ithaca Journal over the last month that describe some of the need for our services. And these are the kinds of cases we're involved in. Cases involving sex trafficking of youth, cases involving child pornography that are local cases, and cases involving sexual assault and rape of young people in our community. And please know that what you read in the paper is just a small percentage of the cases that we're seeing. What makes it to the paper is probably in the single-digit percentage.
30 seconds.
I'm the new director of the agency, and we are working with our board to increase our development work and decrease our reliance on government funding. But this process does take time, and we will never be able to fully fund services without government support. But we're working to adjust the new budget realities of the economy. I know that I don't have a room full of people with me who are here to talk about using our services. And that's not because our services don't make an impact, and it's not because our services don't make a difference, and it's not because people aren't grateful that we're there when they need us the most at what our clients often describe as some of the most difficult, if not the most difficult time of their life. And they're not here because it's not emotionally or physically safe for the children and families we work with to stand up at a public and possibly televised hearing and to share the terrible traumas that they've experienced. So it means that I have the responsibility to be the voice for the children and families that we're serving. So I thank you for your time and attention, and I encourage you to contact me directly if I can provide additional information that helps you with this decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Kathy Miller, followed by Priscilla Ryer, I hope. Priscilla Ryer, who will be followed by Pete Myers.
Jim, while they're coming up, if there are other people in the room who have children with them who
who this may be their first experience with government, and that need to get home, maybe they could pass you a note and you could take that under advisement in the order.
If they want to do that, yeah, I would do that. Go ahead.
Hi, Priscilla Ryer. I live in West Danby.
Please use the microphone, okay? There you go.
I was hearing further away. Priscilla Ryer, I live in West Danby, and I'm here on behalf of Big Brothers Big Sisters. You guys might see $21,000 this year, but the last 5 years, if this goes through, it's 30% of their budget, which is huge. And you see $21,000, and I see lots of children. And we live in West Danby, so we wouldn't be able to get those services. And I think this is county money, which that doesn't make sense that city children can only get the services that the county money puts out there. Would you like to say something?
I support Big Brothers and Big Sisters.
Great. Thank you so much. Pete Myers, followed by Dave.
Hi, my name is Pete Myers. I reside at 142 Giles Street in Ithaca, and I have the pleasure of Pam McAsee representing me on the county legislature, and in January it'll be Carol Chalk. Hopefully. I'm here to speak on the issue of living wage. I'm actually the director of the Tompkins County Workers Center. For those who don't know, we started as an organization in 2003 as the Tompkins County Living Wage Coalition and became the Workers Center in 2006. So living wage is very important to us. For those who don't know, living wage is the amount of money a single person needs to live self-sufficiently in our society. We were actually, certify employers as being living wage employers. The county was one of our first living wage employers and the largest living wage employer with, I thought it was 750, but I think I saw 721 employees for the county. This past, a year ago, we were visited by two gentlemen who had seen our yard signs make the minimum wage a living wage. We believe that the minimum wage at $7.25 is absolutely ridiculous, or poverty wages. The living wage, which is $12.62 right now, in Tompkins County, or $13.94 without health insurance. Just a little background about living wage. But last year we were visited by Stanley McPherson and Milton Webb, who were sitting over here that way. I can't really point in the direction, but you'll probably be hearing from them as well. They actually work for a company called ReCommunity Recycling, and they were actually, which is a county contractor, contracts with the county. They initially were hired in through Kelly Temporary Services, which is a multinational temporary agency, at $8.25 an hour. Then they were hired in 7 months later, approximately, at $9 an hour, which is where they're at now. And we at the Tompkins County Workers Center are organizing to ensure that these workers are paid a living wage, as are all county contracted workers. I just want to raise a few issues about the clear benefits to the community of these workers being paid a living wage. And this is actually about much more than Stanley and Milton. There are hundreds and hundreds of county contracted workers. The benefits to the community include that I think we would all agree that the more people in our community that have high-paying jobs, the better of a community we're going to have, the healthier of a community we're going to have, the more vital of a community. And as well, people who are in poverty wage jobs are actually, through no fault of their own, actually taxing our county social services system, which the taxpayers are also paying for. This past Tuesday, we submitted petitions to the county that 1,157 county residents signed, basically saying that that all county contracted workers should be paid a living wage, just as county employees are doing, and that they are willing to pay a small increase in taxes. I am one of those signatories, and the increase in taxes may not actually need to happen, because we see in the county contingency fund, which has been increased from $772,000 to $887,000, that's not earmarked at this point. This extra $115,000 could go into a living wage contingency fund as we move forward, and we're just putting that word out there and encouraging the county legislators to do the right thing in terms of a living wage. And for those watching on TV, please write to your county legislator and let them know how important it is that a living wage be paid to all workers. Thank you.
Good job, Pete. 3 minutes. That was great. Go ahead, Dave.
Hi, Dave Turk. I live in Trumansburg. I moved there 8 years ago, and I thought I was moving into a fairly homogenous community. until I started to experience, especially through my kids in the school system, just how economically diverse it is. Everything from the very poor to the quite well off are there. And, you know, I hear these people talk about these wonderful services that they work to provide to people. And it makes me think how so many people who aren't earning a living wage are the ones who need these services. And we think of this as something that will benefit individuals, but really it benefits the community as a whole. When people start earning a living wage, no longer are they going to be dependent on a lot of these services. School lunch programs, food stamps, these costs will go down to the county, and as these people start spending their money to procure goods for themselves, we'll see sales tax rise. So the living wage is something that's not just a benefit to individuals, it's a benefit to us all. And when people are living well, it leads not just to a stronger, healthier community. It leads to people who are nutritionally, physically, and mentally more healthy, and this benefits us all and reduces the needs for these kinds of services. So please consider extending the living wage to contract employees as well. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Milton, followed by Molly Barger. Is that right? Okay.
Hello, my name is Milton Webb, and I fight for a living wage with Stanley McPherson. I'm a workers' center prodigy from Pete Myers. We need this living wage really bad because you got a lot of people out there that's living in poverty, and they are afraid to come up and speak on a living wage. I'm not. I live in poverty every day. I go to work every day. I work 40 hours a week, and there are times when, just like some of my friends who work 40 hours a week, can't make it through the month without having to go borrow money from someone or somewhere. This living wage is something that we really need. It's not just for the people like me and Stanley and everybody else. It's for the children, for the people that are married and has children that don't have a living wage that are fighting for to keep their families together. That's what it's all about, family. And fighting for this living wage thing is something that we're going to do, and we're going to keep on doing it until we get it. So therefore, this living wage is something that everybody needs, not just me, not just Stanley. We're fighting for everybody. And if you don't think that we need this living wage, put yourself in our spot. I offered 4 months my check to somebody who think we don't need this living wage, but I haven't had any takers yet. So therefore, we need this living wage, and everybody needs to jump on board. And thank you very much.
Thank
I don't
you,
take a lot of time.
Thank you, Milton. Molly Barger, and followed by Olivia Townsend, is it?
Hello, I am Molly Barger. I'm staff of Big Brothers Big Sisters. I'm also a big sister. This is my little sister, Hope, who has agreed to accompany me tonight. So I am staff of Big Brothers Big Sisters, but I'm actually here to talk about my experience being a big sister. On November 17th, 2004, I met my little sister, Hope, for the first time. Having just turned 6, she was a little ball of energy with a toothless smile and a soap... and a spirit so bright that I just knew we would become great friends. I loved her instantly. Hope and I have been having fun together ever since that day. We spend a few hours a week doing anything from swimming to ice skating. We've had snowball fights and hula hooping competitions. We've gone on hikes and watched movies and had overnights and all that stuff. I felt my heart fill with pride as she learned to swim and laughed till it hurt at her jokes and the ridiculous things she says. These seemingly small moments have become the highlight of my week. From 1 week to the next, I might not see too much of a change in Hope. But when I put together all those weeks for 9 years, I realize everything we've accomplished together. Among other milestones, I've seen her learn to read, write, tell time, and ride a bike without training wheels. I've attended her 5th grade graduation and 8th grade graduation, and I can hardly wait to see her graduate from high school in 2017. I've watched her go from kindergarten to having her first boyfriend, And now instead of working on addition and subtraction, we're taking on issues of self-esteem, friendship, and boys. Some things, however, haven't changed. 9 years after that first day, Hope is still a ball of energy with a bright spirit. She's just a much taller ball of energy whose teeth finally grew in. Hope has taught me many things over the years. Some of these are simple things, like a new joke or how to throw a football. Not very well. Some, however, are much more valuable lessons. Lessons in resiliency, patience, and friendship. Over these 9 years, I have enjoyed watching Hope's interests and abilities change and evolve. I love seeing her grow into her own person as she discovers her many talents. I feel so lucky to have Hope in my life, as she definitely lives up to her name. I want Hope to know that I will always be there for her. I look forward to watching her reach her full potential as an amazing adult. And I would also like to state that Hope does not live in the city of Ithaca, so this relationship wouldn't have been possible if 9 years ago we were in this same financial situation. So I just would urge you to approve the over-target request so other people can meet littles as awesome as Hope.
Thank you very much. Miranda?
Jim, excuse me. I think Hope ought to have three
Hope,
minutes to...
Do you-
Maybe retaliate.
To respond.
Hope, do you want to say anything?
Hope, do you want to say anything?
Apparently not. Miranda Inman and Sherman Inman, is it? Miranda? All you need to do is tell us your name. I don't know that I have it. Yeah, Miranda and Sherman, is it? Yeah, go to the microphone. Go ahead. We want to use these microphones. They're brand new, and we want everyone to talk into them. Go ahead. Tell me your name and where you live.
I'm Olivia, and I live in Ithaca.
And I'm Sophie, and I go to Cornell. And I'm her big sister. We were paired in June.
And my brother, he needs this program, the Big Brothers Big Sister program, because that he's 5 years old, and he's going to be 6 next year. And he really wants a big brother. And mostly the time I get lonely and then my big sister comes and then I have a friend.
We have a lot of fun together. It's really fulfilling for me. Thank you.
Right. Thank you both. Let's give her a hand up.
Jim, can I just say, I think maybe we have a few nominations for the Distinguished Youth Award in this room.
Yeah, I hope you're writing them down.
Very cute.
Okay. Please identify yourself. And.
Okay. I'm Miranda Inman. I'm an Ithaca resident. This is my son, Taylor.
Okay.
And I have two daughters over there, Chloe and Vanessa.
All right. Thank you.
My kids have been part of the Big Brother, Big Sister program since Chloe was 6, and she's now 11. It's huge. It's so wonderful. Sorry.
It's all right.
You want to talk about what you and John do? They are...
Take your time. It's okay.
He has learned so much. He's learned how to fix bikes and make computers. And... Sorry, I can't see this program go. Their bigs have been such a big part of our life. Vanessa's big sister, not only does she come and get Vanessa every week or every 2 weeks or whatever's available to her, this poor girl's got 3 jobs and 10 million nieces and nephews. But my kids have been such a big part of their family, too. Birthday parties and anniversary camping, Vanessa goes with her big to do. She's just a huge part of our life, and so is John. Chloe's had two big sisters. One was a Cornell student, and we all know how that one goes. And the other one was, she was an IC student. She just graduated, and Chloe still talks to them to this day, almost on a weekly, if not every 2 week basis. She had to call Carly 2-3 days after school started and tell her about her day at school. Her big sister from Cornell is Olga. She works in Washington, D.C., and we IM on Facebook all the time. In fact, I just talked to her the other night. When my father-in-law passed away in April, very unexpectedly, Kelly came and got my two girls and took them to the movies just to get their mind off what was going on. Sorry. So please, please don't take our programs. We need them.
Thank you. I applaud your courage for coming up here and talking to us. Thank you very much. Sherman Inman, followed by Liz Vance.
How are we doing tonight, folks? Big Brother and Big Sister program. Where to start with it? I guess the only thing that you can say about it is, you know, I want you guys to picture a youth child who went through many problems with his family. No mentors. Nobody there that he can look up to. Yeah, we got the youth advocacy program. They're a good program. But then I want you to picture a child after going through so much, get a mentor who he can look up to. Because there's some programs out there, yeah, they're for the kids, but they don't trust the people in that program. But then you got the Big Brother, Big Sister program. They connect them with who they can do most with. They pair them up perfectly. That child learns to trust that big brother or that big sister. And what do? They open up to them. They turn them around. I am one of them children. I had three big brothers back when I was a child. If you folks in this room knew me back then, you would say I was the spawn of Satan. I had three big brothers who helped me turn my life around. In the different programs and different zones here, imagine what that child would do to your zone if you did not have that mentor. He would be taunted. He'd be looked down upon. He'd be frowned upon. A lot of the parents would say they don't want them in that zone or in that area. But then give him a mentor, and what's he going to do? He's going to turn his life around, and then the different zones are going to be like, what happened to this child? He was a problem child, or she was a problem child. The mentors turned him around or her around, and everybody wants him in their area. So to take away the funding or not give the funding to the Big Brother, Big Sister program is like saying, all right, young man or young lady, you're a problem child. We don't want you. We can't help you. But to give us that money so we can set up each and every child, no matter what township, just as long as they are in this program, in this county, you could turn a lot of child's lives around instead of making them think that they're a waste of time. So I want you to think about the time that you folks can put into another child's life and help that child change their life. So then maybe when they get older, they can join this program and say, okay, they helped me change my life. I want to change another child's life. And let the dominoes fall as they go on through. Thank you.
Thank you. Liz Vance. Followed by Abby, and I can't read the last printing, D-O-Y-N-O, is that? Or I'm sorry? Okay. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Liz Vance. I'm a Danby resident, parent, grandparent, and also the acting director of the Ithaca Youth Bureau. I came tonight thinking that I would talk to you about the statistics and research and all of the findings that studies show that mentoring has positive impacts on youth. And I've been sitting here listening to the young people who have come up to speak tonight, the mentors, the bigs, the littles, And I'm going, wow, we have local, real-life examples of the positive impacts of all of the things that the research tells us mentoring does for kids. We have kids that are doing better in school. We have kids who have grown up with built-in tutors by having a big sister. Your back table there was turned into the homework table for this evening at the request of the young people. We have children who have stayed out of trouble. I think we've heard a lot of examples about how mentoring is working, and it's also important to kids and families in our community. So I don't have a lot to add to that other than we're seeing right here. Mentoring works, and I urge you to vote to include the $20,893 to continue to support the Big Brother, Big Sister program for all of children in Tompkins County, because it does work. So thank you for your time this evening, and thank you for hearing all of us.
Thank you, Liz. Abby?
She's not here.
Brittany Earle. Oh, I'm sorry. Take two. Right.
Hello, I'm Brittany Earle. I also work for Big Brothers Big Sisters. I'm case manager there. So I don't have any sappy stories, but I did want to touch base. I spoke Tuesday evening a little bit about my experience working in the juvenile justice system here in Tompkins County, actually. We're home to three facilities here in Tompkins County that are home to incarcerated youth. George Junior Republic, our William George Agency, Louis Gossett, or also known as Finger Lakes Residential Center, and McCormick Secure. All of these facilities do serve Tompkins County youth. William George Agency is one of the largest nonprofit treatment facilities in the nation. Finger Lakes and McCormick are home to some of the most violent youth offenders, crimes that would warrant sentences in adult prison if they were charged as an adult. I want to reiterate the fact that 89% of boys who enter the system end up back in the system by the time they're 28. The majority of the youth that are in these facilities, most importantly Finger Lakes and McCormick, they used to be from downstate. However, in August 2011, Mayor Bloomberg launched his Close to Home Act, which serves to keep New York City juvenile offenders downstate for rehabilitation. So it's had a positive impact downstate. And our facilities up here have continually seen less and less children from New York City and more kids from communities in upstate. The point I'm trying to make here is that the youth who call these facilities home, they're at-risk youth. And these are the children that we serve in our program. Though the children in these facilities are at the high-end risk of the spectrum or the continuum, they're not much different than the children we serve. Characteristics of an at-risk youth are chronic poverty, single parents, family dysfunction, large families, bad grades, bad neighborhoods, negative peers, past or ongoing trauma, mental diagnoses, etc. I currently have about 45 kids in my caseload. 31 of them have at least four of these risk factors, putting them at high risk for outcomes such as teenage pregnancy, drug use, criminal antisocial behavior, high school education or lower, suicide attempts, abuse, out-of-home placements like George Junior, Finger Lakes, McCormick, etc. One common trend in nearly every study that has ever been done on at-risk youth that don't engage in risky behavior is that they have at least one positive person in their life. Either in their home, their community, or among their peers. And as Gladys Carrion said, and I mentioned on Tuesday, the one-to-one relationship has been the exception in a troubled system. From my experience working in the prison, there is a quiet desperation that hangs in the air. And we need to support the programs that are here in our own community that can help the children here that are at risk. So I urge you to look at the over-target request that we're requesting and to support the families and the children that are here that need these services. Thank you.
Thank you, Brittany. Joe Gibson, followed by Stanley McPherson.
Hi, everyone. I'm Joe Gibson. I'm the coordinator of the Big Brother Big Sister program. You've all been very patient listening to so many of us tonight. I have made a list of entirely new reasons that you have not heard yet about why you should support the OTR request. First off, Tompkins County Youth Services has made it very clear that we are interested in data-based outcomes, New York State Office of Children and Family Services have Touchstones Protocol and all sorts of things like that. Big Brothers Big Sisters is the industry leader in research and evaluation in mentoring outcomes. And this local agency is Tompkins County's only connection to Big Brothers Big Sisters of America. They and their partners and people they've contracted with have done over 15 studies in the last 20 years, all of which point to the fact that mentoring has these positive effects on kids. And I don't mean to convince you of that, because I think you believe that. But what I think we need to look at is stopping the slow erosion of funding to this program. It's not just about $20,000. It's about over $80,000 over the last 5 years, and it's about 2015, 2016, and 2017, and the way mentoring seems to be going in our county. Here's another not-said-yet reason. That $21,000 is important to us this year because it takes us to the breaking point in many places. We're getting to the point where it's becoming difficult for us to continue to be affiliated with Big Brothers Big Sisters. Also, we're getting to the point where it's becoming difficult to find staffing time to continue partnering with other agencies. We partner with the Family Reading Partnership to put a book in the hands of every single new match that comes through our doors. And many studies have shown that third grade reading rates are actually one of the factors that people use when planning the number of prison vents that are going to be in any given community. And we're doing something about that. We are trying to partner right now with the Finger Lakes Independence Center, of which Larry is a part, to make sure we serve more children with disabilities. This becomes more difficult when we have less money to staff those kinds of partnerships. Next, I just wanted to say that Mr. Dennis made it clear that $438,000 is about 1%. Well, $21,000 is 1/21st of 1%. In fact, all five of the OTRs that Tompkins County Youth Services put together, if you put them all together, is 1/8 of 1%, which still puts you under 4% for a tax levy. So I just want to throw that out there, and I know it's not that simple because there's about 500 pages to the budget, but I wanted to say that just so it's put out there. Lastly, I just wanted to point out that we have circulated petitions both online and in the community and have gotten approximately 950 signatures from people supporting the agency. I have them right here. I'm not sure what the official protocol is to submit such a thing, but here they are. Martha.
You can give them to Martha.
Okay, in case you'd like to look through them. Included in there are also various personal comments that people who signed the online petition had to make. Thank you so much for your time, and thank you for continuing to listen to all of us who come up here. I wouldn't want to be in your seats, and I'm thankful that you did.
Thank you, Joe. Stanley McPherson, followed by, is it Natalie Bisseau? Is that right?
Hello there.
Hello.
My name is Stanley West McPherson. And I'm here tonight gladly to talk about living wage. I heard all the discussion tonight. I heard all of the people tonight. My ears was open. I also heard about the budget. And I'm looking at where monies is going. And I see nothing about implementing living wage. I see nothing about making sure that the county deal with the subcontractors and implicate monies in their budget for living wage. I also see that monies is going to different places and private sectors and private entities, but nothing is still said about living wage. Nothing still hasn't been said about what you're going to do about this resolution this year about living wage. About people's lives at stake here, people that need money, that's working hard, that's representing this county, people that uphold this county, people that put their lives on the line for this county.
there's nothing been said about making sure that people receive a just wage, a living wage for their families, for their work, for their lives, children's lives. Sometimes I think that you want to drive people the wrong way, force them to do things that necessary they don't need to do, people to look at other options and look at other things which they don't need to do. That's why we're here, to stand in the gap for people that do not have tolerance, some people do not have the patience, some people do not have the whereabouts. And so you know what they do? They do other things. They turn and they say, well, you know what? I'm going to get it my way. This, forget about this living wage. Forget about this asking. You know, so sometimes you can deter a child, 16, 17, 20. You can deter them to do the wrong thing, to be wind up behind the eight ball. Why? Because you are not providing a living wage for them as a person, dignity. People need self-respect. They need to be respected. If they put in a good day work, then they need to get a good day pay. I pray that you choose the latter. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Stanley. Let me just make one comment about the budget, Stanley, that we have recognized that we have to do something. And as we move through the budget process, there is money available or in the budget that we would have to redirect towards solving the problem that you've been talking about and we've been studying for 6 months with our committee. We do not have a line, you are correct, we do not have a line in our budget that says living wage money. We have to figure out how we're going to solve the problem. And believe me, there's not a person around the table and the county administrator who is not thinking about it and has a plan, has ideas. And we have to bring that all together, and you will see something from the county legislature before the end of 2013. The next person, Nate.
Yeah, no, and I just wanted to say that the budget process is such that, you know, the county administrator's recommended his budgets. We've been spending the past few weeks learning about the budget that he's recommended. Now, votes to modify that budget start next week. All right, and so that's the opportunity for legislators like me and the people around this table to propose changes to the budget. And so that's where that process begins. All right.
And I was planning on talking about at the end of this meeting. Natalie,
can I just add one thing to that? Because I think...
No, not at this point. Go ahead. I'll come back to you, Carol. Go ahead.
I am not Natalie Bazuma.
I realize that.
She handed me this as she was leaving.
Oh, all right, go ahead.
And so I'm not really prepared, and I don't have my eyeglasses, but she left. She left.
You want mine?
Does somebody have a 2.5, or what do we need here?
Oh, my God. I think I can read it. My name is Mimi Melegrido. I'm with the Big Brothers Big Sisters program. I've actually been with the program for almost 26 years. Sammy retired. And I just want you to know that I just love this love affair that I have with the Big Brothers Big Sisters because it has meant so much to me. I also want you to know that I was a big sister in the 70s, matched with four children, and you never know when you're a match what's going to happen with your littles. But 17 years later, I got a call from a girl who was matched with me when she was six. She was at Wells College at the summer, at the camp, and called the city and asked for me to ask if I was the Mimi Melegrido who was her big sister. I cannot talk about that without choking, being choked up, but I just want you to know that I too had a wonderful experience being a big sister. This is a letter that was sent to Natalie Bizou, who is my colleague, from a volunteer who graduated in May. She was matched with a girl named Chelly, and her name is Jamie. And I'd like to read that letter to you, and hopefully a good way to end the people or the segment of our Big Brothers, Big Sisters. I don't know if I can read it. Dear Chelly, I miss you very much. I hope you're getting excited about starting the eighth.
Thanks, man.
Oh, thank you.
Dr. McAtee.
Start the clock again.
Mimi, move back just a little bit. So you can...
Go ahead, Mimi.
Thank you. I miss you very much. I hope you're getting excited about entering the eighth grade. I have good memories of the eighth grade. In fact, I met my best friend Ashley in the eighth grade, as well as realizing that I wanted to be a teacher because I loved working with kids. The eighth grade allows you to be able to try out different things so that you know what you love doing and even focus on it in high school and college. I hope you get to try a lot of new things this year, as well as focus on the many things that you're already good at. You are so talented at so many things. You are so good in many sports, including tennis and swimming, and you are such a great artist. Not only can you draw well, but you also can write creative and interesting stories. Please remember that these things that you do so well as hobbies are people's careers. All the TV shows and movies that we enjoy have people who are writers and illustrators who work on them. And if you wanted to, I believe in your ability to do that. You also are an incredible chef. And I know many, many grown-ups who cannot cook as well as you can or have such creativity. There are so many people who know you, including me, who are totally astounded by how talented and wonderful you are. However, what is most important is whether you believe that you are as well. I hope you recognize that you are the only person like you, and that any dream or hope that you have for your future is achievable, as long as you remember to work hard and give all things that I love about you a chance to shine. I hope you're well, and I miss you. Thinking of you always, Jamie. In closing, I would like to just say that for the past few years, I have been performing weddings for some of our volunteers in our program. And they have included their littles at their weddings. And all I hear is the greatest thing that has happened to me as a volunteer is having a little in the program, because it has meant so much to me. And for that, I thank you all for listening.
Carol, a short comment.
Oh, but yeah, I just wanted to let Milton and Stanley, who are over there, I wanted to add to what Nathan said about the budget and where the living wage gets built in, and to let you know that you have had an impact. And one way you can see it is if you go to the online version of the budget and search for the term living wage, you will see that there are spots where agencies have written in and they've built it into their target and they've mentioned. So you've had an impact on those moving forward where we're doing new things, and you can find it there as well.
Is there anyone else that did not sign the sheet that would like to make a comment? Let me then finish up by saying thank you all very much for coming. This is the kind of event that makes Tompkins County a great place to live. And we're done. Thank you.